Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Je suis venu vous parler d'Europe.
Und es ist ein guter Tag für Europa.
Europas Rolle i verden bliver stadig vigtigere.
We have our freedom in our hands.
Du lytter til Altingets Europa-podcast, sponsoreret af 3F.
I am in Kiev. I was here from the very first day of the war.
Ina Sovshun sidder gemt i en vens hus et eller andet sted i den ukrainske hovedstad. Det er fredag den 4. marts, og det er lidt over en uge siden, at Ruslands hær invaderede hendes land. Bomberne falder nærmere og nærmere. Hun har allerede set sin fødeby, Kharkiv, gå op i flammer, som var det den syriske borgerkrig.
I saw a bomb exploding like literally 3 minutes walk from my school. I saw them bombarding from the ground, the area where I grew up. So Kharkiv has just been like turned into Aleppo.
Ina Sovsun er 37 år. Hun er økonom og politolog, og så er hun medlem af det ukrainske parlament for det lille liberale oppositionsparti Kholos. Ligesom næsten alle andre parlamentsmedlemmer og ligesom Ukraines præsident, har hun valgt at blive i Kiev så længe som muligt. Hvor længe det så viser sig at være.
I think that Putin as of right now can go as far as we can imagine. I don't think there is anything stopping him. I think we have to admit the fact that he has literally gone crazy.
Velkommen til denne særudgave af Altingets europæiske podcast. Mit navn er Thomas Lauritsen, og den her lille ekstra udsendelse er blevet til, fordi jeg pludselig fik mulighed for at tale med Ina Sovsun om Putin, om Vesten, om at føle sig forrådt, om frygten for atomkrig, om Danmark og om at være mor, datter og politiker midt i en krig. Vi kan alle sammen have brug for at lytte lidt til Ina lige nu, tror jeg. Så her kommer 18 minutters samtale med en indespærret politiker i det belejrede Kiev.
Altingets EU-podcast er sponsoreret af 3F, fordi Danmark fortjener fair journalistik om EU.
First day the war started like 4:30 in the morning. The first bombs I could hear exploding. The first thing I needed to take care of to make sure that my son is relocated to a safe area. So my ex-husband, the father of my son, took my son, our son, to Western Ukraine, and I was staying in Kiev all the time. And the first day of the war, we had the emergency session of the parliament, so I had to go there and then to take care of some other things. And by the time I was ready to go home, it was actually, we were getting information that the Russians are trying to come from the north. And my home is in the north of the city. So I wasn't sure whether it was safe to go there. And friends offered me to stay with them. And they also have like a private house. So I live in a multiple storied building. So it's kind of easier here because when we hear the air raid a lot, we can just go down the basement, which is easier than if I was staying at my place. When I would have to go down like many floors down. So I'm actually staying in Kiev, but not in my place, but at my friend's place. And my son is in Western Ukraine. My boyfriend rejoined the army, so I'm in touch with him, but I don't know where he is exactly. And my dad, and that's what worries me most of all, what I'm trying to figure out what is happening over there, is he got back, he took my mom to Western Ukraine the first day of war, and then he got back. And they live like really close to Kiev, and there are major battles taking place near Kiev. And I think the Ukrainian army shut down all the connection over there. So I cannot get in touch with him for 3 days now. So that is my personal situation.
Can you go out?
No. Yeah, you can during the daytime before the curfew, but it's not very safe. So what the Russians did, it's not that bad right now, but by the very first 2 days of war, that was the major issue with the so-called infiltrators groups. So they were infiltrating into the city, and they are just trying to to make some minor terrorist act, or just start shooting randomly at people. There was this case, I think it was second day of war, when that group they just started shooting randomly in the cars passing by, and they were shooting at a car with a family in them with three kids. And one of the girls, she was seven, she was killed on spot, and the other two are in the hospital. So the major threat in the city are those infiltrators groups. The police and the National Guard and the territorial defense are trying to catch them. But, it's not always working. So again, but this is the situation in Kyiv. The situation mm-hmm. in other cities is very different. Again, my native city of Kharkiv, I just feel so much pain for the people there. I'm getting messages from people like my former classmates with whom I haven't really been in touch for 20 years since we graduated. Mm-hmm. But now everyone is just sending messages like, Ina, please tell the whole world what Putin is doing to us here in Kharkiv. This is just terrible. They are bombarding. They have launched a missile into the central square. I saw a bomb exploding like literally 3 minutes walk from my school. I saw them bombarding from the ground the area where I grew up. So Kharkiv is just being turned into Aleppo. That is just unbelievable. I can't even imagine the exact number of civilian casualties. It's not available because it's very difficult to find the exact number. But Kharkiv is on the verge of catastrophe. And then mm-hmm. southern Ukraine is a bit different. So they're not bombarding that from air, but they're gaining ground. Because like in Kharkiv, they, despite the heaviest bombardments that they launched, they didn't manage to get into the city. But in southern Ukraine, they actually did take control of several cities.
We heard about this big nuclear power plant.
There is this nuclear power plant in Zaporizhia, which they seem to have taken control of. It is functioning, but they were just for you to realize that they were shooting indiscriminately just in the direction of the nuclear power station. The very fact that they only got into the administrative building is actually a luck, not deliberate work on their side.
How far do you think Putin is willing to go?
I think that Putin, as of right now, can go as far as we can imagine. I don't think there is anything stopping him. I think we have to admit the fact that he has literally gone crazy. Like, he is not, this is not some evil political planning strategy or whatever. This is just a guy going delusional and going crazy, and he's running this, you know, what they claim to be the second largest army in the world. So I do not think there is anything in his brain that will make him stop. I do, however, keep hope that there are more sane people around him who will at some point realize that he needs to be stopped. Otherwise, that will mean not just the destruction of Ukraine, because that they can, you know, accept. Well, that's what they're aiming at. But that would just mean the destruction of Russia and the whole of the planet. So that is our greatest hope, is that the Russians, there are some people in the Russian elites who would put a halt to that. But that truly depends on how the West will react. I think that's why what I'm doing right now is basically 24/7. I'm talking to the international media, mm-hmm. trying to explain the situation here in Ukraine and arguing to step up. Because at the moment, we do actually feel very much betrayed by the West. So basically, we were attacked by Putin because he was claiming that we're getting too close to the West. Which is, of course, nonsense, because he attacked us in 2014 when we were officially a non-allied state and so on. But we did have this great hope that we should move closer to Europe.
Let's get back to the international situation in a second. I just want to ask you another thing about your situation. As many other politicians, I understand, you have decided to stay in Kiev, and your president has as well, of course, in your government. Are you going to stay there no matter what happens?
That's a tough one, because I do have responsibility as a politician. I do have responsibility as a mother. So I'm now considering whether I should take my son out of Ukraine. And as I said, initially, my ex-husband did take him to Western Ukraine. But right now, thinking about whether we should relocate him even further, given that Western Ukraine is under constant airstrikes as well. My ex-husband cannot leave Ukraine because men are not allowed to leave the country right now. So it is possible I will have to go out for a couple of days just to relocate my son, because it appears I might be the only one who would be able to do that. So that's my responsibility as a mother. But as a politician, yes, we are holding ground. We are here. We did have emergency session in the parliament yesterday just to show to the world that we are here. We are, you know, we are keeping the city. We are not leaving. Like the majority of MPs are still in Kyiv, and others who are not, they have left for their constituencies.
You know, when I look at your life and career, you were born in the 80s, you were an academic, you were a politician, you were in government, etc. Did you ever imagine that you would be in a situation like this in your life?
Never. Actually, for the Danish audience, I did my master's in Sweden, in Lund.
Yes, I saw that, yes.
Yeah, just across the border. And that now it just feels like a different life. I mean, it is a different life. I did my master's years ago. But I think even 2 weeks ago, if someone would tell me that I would have to split with my son, that I wouldn't be able to see my boyfriend, that I wouldn't know how to get in touch with my dad, then... I just wouldn't believe that. I think we were all, I think no one could really believe that this would be happening. And it still feels like sometimes late in the evening when I finish, I'm done with all the interviews that I can, I think like maybe I will go to sleep and I will wake up and it will all turn out to be a bad dream. So it just feels so surreal, and we have to brace ourselves because we do realize it's most likely is going to be a long fight. It's not going to be over in a week. It's not going to be over in 2 weeks. So I think a couple of days before the war started, I was getting messages from the administrator in the university where I teach, because I still continue to teach. And she was saying, like, Ina, can you please approve the schedule for the next semester for starting March? Well, apparently I'm not teaching in March. So now, even... myself as a political scientist, I can't imagine that. I couldn't predict that. Also, I teach a course, and that's will be the last comment. I teach a course on ethics and politics. And I think if we survive and if I go back to teaching, I will just have to remake all of it. Because after what we have seen, I will have to reconsider so many things.
Mm. If we look at the international situation and the reaction of Europe and the world, you've already said that you feel betrayed by that. For instance, the question of a no-fly zone you mentioned. Do you understand the people in other countries who say that, yes, we would like to do something like that, but we're too afraid that it would provoke an all-out nuclear war with Russia?
Well... I do understand that, but here is the situation from the Ukrainian side. In 1994, we gave up our nuclear weapon. We were a nuclear weapon state after the Soviet Union. We did have the nuclear weapon, and we voluntarily gave that up in exchange for security assurances on the Western side. The United States, the United Kingdom, we were all provided with assurances that in case we are in danger, we should be protected. And right now, that's exactly why it feels like betrayal, because we did have those promises, those assurances in writing. in exchange for our nuclear weapon. So now we are thinking like we probably shouldn't have given up our nuclear weapon, because if we hadn't, that would not be an option. Then Putin wouldn't be bombarding our cities. So now, yes, we do feel betrayed, precisely because we were given assurances in writing, in official documents by the West. I do understand the argument that the nuclear option is always there. Well, I do believe, again, we have to understand at this point, we do have a delusional guy over there in Kremlin, or he's not in the Kremlin right now, he's hiding somewhere in the bunk in the middle of nowhere in Russia. And he doesn't need the West to do anything. He can just claim that the West did something if he wants to use the nuclear weapon option, like he did with Ukraine. He claimed that Ukraine is a threat and that is why he's invading us. It has nothing to do with reality. It's like in his delusional brain, he's just making up explanations. I still have slight hope. That's a fact-based hope that probably there are some people in his surroundings who wouldn't allow for that to happen. So I do think that the level of the threat is overestimated. And that's why we're asking for no-fly zone, just because like in keeping this most terrible option open, we are failing to protect the lives of thousands of civilians right now. Mm-hmm. The second thing is this. Let's imagine Putin does the worst. He completely devastates my country, and he is like completely kills everyone here, and he takes control over Ukraine. Would he stop there?
Mm.
Because that is the biggest question, and I think everyone again has to admit that he wouldn't stop. He already did say that he doesn't like Poland and Hungary in NATO. He doesn't like the Baltic states in NATO. He has issues with the Finland and Sweden neutrality. You must have read that statement by the Swedish Minister of Defense a couple of days ago with Russian jets flying over the Swedish territory. Mm-hmm. Would the West step up then? Because I believe then, yes, the West would step up then if Putin would do something to Finland, right? So if the West would be willing to step up then why not to step in earlier when with an attempt to save millions of lives here in Ukraine? Mm-hmm. So I do hear this argument, but I'm not willing to accept that, because right now this just sounds like an excuse, and it's a bad one, because it's not really if you proceed with this logic, you can see how that, you know, we just end up with the same, with the West getting involved. It's just a matter of time and casualties.
Let me ask you at the end here, what do you think people in Denmark could do to help you in the Ukraine? And what would be your message to people in Denmark? I mean, you, as you said, you know Scandinavia. You've lived there and studied there.
Yeah, I do and love Scandinavia. And I do think that Scandinavia has been very supportive of Ukraine, both Denmark and Sweden. We were seen probably one of our best friends. Well, again, please do support those full-scale sanctions. Please do ask your governments to do that. For the time being, I'm asking to support the Ukrainian refugees who are fleeing Ukraine. We got reports about 1 million people already fled. Those are mainly like women with children. Mm-hmm. So any humanitarian aid is extremely needed.
What do you think is the most important thing about this that people in Denmark should understand now?
I think people of Denmark should grasp should understand that Putin is a threat to the whole world right now. Like, he is attacking Ukraine. But he is actually attacking us because we chose to be a democratic state. We are a messy democratic state. I'm representing opposition. I'm not I do have so many issues with how Ukrainian state is functioning. But it is, after all, a democracy. We do select our rulers. We do select our parliament in open and free elections. Again, I do have so many issues with how Ukrainian democracy is functioning, but it is a democracy. And it is the very idea of democracy and respect for basic human rights and dignity that Putin is attacking. That is what he sees as a threat. So any democratic state cannot just pretend that it's not about them. it is about every single state that that does believe in democracy and human rights and respect for human dignity. When Putin is claiming that he attacked Ukraine because we wanted to get into NATO, that is just just a lie, like everything he is saying, because he did attack us again in 2014 when we were a neutral state. He did grasp part of our territory. And I'm sorry, but he didn't get the reaction that we wanted from the West for doing that. That is why he is doing right now what he is doing, because he didn't get a full trade embargo after he annexed Crimea, because everyone was just expecting that, we need the Russian gas. Well, we got the Russian gas. We have bombs falling on our heads right now. So had the West reacted in a proper time after 2014 and just exclude Russia from anything possible in 2014 simply for annexing Crimea, I'm sure that what is happening in Kharkiv right now, what is happening in the cities around Kyiv right now, and in towns and villages wouldn't be happening. So it's really now up for the West to say if they will accept what is happening to Ukraine right now, or if they will allow for Putin to proceed further.
Ja, tak til Ina Sofsun, parlamentariker, akademiker, mor og borger i Ukraines hovedstad Kiev. Vi slutter interviewet her. Jeg talte med hende her fredag formiddag. Også tak til dig, fordi du lyttede med på den her særudgave af Altingets Europa-podcast. Mit navn er Thomas Lauritsen, og den her udsendelse er redigeret af Karoline Tranberg. I næste uge er jeg tilbage med den almindelige podcast sammen med vores EU-redaktør Rikke Albrechtsen, eller så almindelig som den nu kan blive. Mens du venter på det, kan du læse meget mere om Ukraine, om Europa og selvfølgelig om dansk politik på altinget.dk. Tak for i dag. Lyt med igen næste uge lige her, hvor Altinget taler om Europa.
Altingets EU-podcast er sponsoreret af 3F, fordi Danmark fortjener fair journalistik om EU.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.